Comic News, episode 212. I am one of your hosts, Chris, alongside, beware, it's Mike.
Hey, it's me, and we're here with another awesome special guest. Mr. Will Perkins will be joining us later in the show to talk about his story, Goblin. Really cool stuff. Chris and I had both read the graphic novel, and it's awesome. That's all we can say, so look forward to that. I got some fun story news. Well, not news, but story time with you this week, Chris. I started traveling for work again. And I found myself in Oklahoma, Tulsa, Oklahoma. And part of the thing,
and the Dr. Manhattan showed up.
Yeah, the Dr. Manhattan and the giant squid, and here I am. But long story short, when I used to travel for work, I would like look up local comic shops and like, you know, check them out. And I had found one in Tulsa. I actually went to the Bad Idea website, because everybody knows the Bad Idea comics, and you only get in certain shops. And one of them just happened to be in Tulsa. Like, I have nothing near me in Albany, New York, but like, apparently Tulsa had one. And I went into the shop, Impulse Comics and Games, I believe. And I'll probably tag him in a tweet. I think I tagged him when I posted a picture of some comics. Great shop. I missed doing this, just walking into a shop, and they had a pretty awesome section for indie comics. Like, they devoted like a whole wall just to indie stuff. So like, you know, you had Stephanie Phillips, Red Atlantic there. You had an Ahoy thing. You had a whole section for Aftershock. And then the Bad Idea thing was right on the counter, you know, one per person. So, it was just awesome to see, like, and like, you know, it was Wednesday. I hadn't realized, like, the person I was traveling with, I just met for the first time. He was a sales guy with me. And it was like, you know, we had an hour to kill before we got to the airport. And he's like, well, you know, we don't have that much time to really do anything. And I was like, all right, well, you want to go to this comic shop? And he's like, let's do it. And I was like, hell yeah.
I was like, best friends forever.
Yeah, and I was like, he's not into comics. I mean, he kind of knew I was in comics after traveling with him for a couple days, but it was just cool. I mean, I was like explaining a lot of the shit going on in different publishers and stuff like that. And I think he bought like the DC Superhero Girls for his daughters, that cartoon that's now a book. So, and then he bought one of the Bad Idea comics, and he's like, is this good? I'm like, honestly, I have no idea, but the first printing sold out, so it's probably really good. And Matt Kent was writing it, so that was my little story for the week. But it feels good to, like, you know, step foot in a comic shop again and see indie comics alive and well.
That's, you know, good. That's, if we ever get to the point where we, like, or I ever get to the point where going places for, like, cons and shit, I want to do that. Just go to local shops and just check it out. Like, I would love to do more of that.
Yeah.
I don't do enough traveling in my life. My job obviously doesn't make me do a whole lot of traveling outside of the small square area where I throw packages on a porch. But I would love to do more of that.
Yeah, it was just nice to be out and seeing comics alive and well, you know?
My weekend has been all about the zen of life.
Uh-huh.
As I play the new Pokemon Snap.
Oh, that came
and
out.
I take some pictures of some Pokemon.
How is it? Is it awesome?
It's exactly what you remember Pokemon Snap being. It's just got this weird, I love when like everybody, like the kids are asleep, it's just me and the missus, and she's playing Call of Duty screaming at people top for lungs, and I'm just sitting there like in the zone, just like in a happy mood, just like, oh, it's a fucking Bidoof, oh my god, it's a fucking Pikachu, oh my god. And just loving it. So it's, I wish I had this in my life all the time so I could just like kind of chill out and be like, let's go take some pictures of some Pokemon, guys.
Yeah. So, I mean, without spoiling too much of the game, have there been like secret ones that you find? I remember like throwing an apple or something at Pokemon in the original one. Like,
yeah, so it's funny. I haven't gotten too far, but there are like, you know, there's glowing Pokemon and all this like weird shit.
Oh, man.
I read an interview with the guys who are making this, and like, there's actual like real thought put into the idea of some of that stuff from the original one. Like, maybe we shouldn't be throwing apples at like random animals and shit. Like, you know, it's not really nice in their ecosystem. And I'm just like, these fucking people thought about way more than I did, and I wrote a comic based on this shit.
No, I just wanted to whip an apple at a Pokemon. What do you mean? That was the best part.
Yeah, you can, like, feed them berries and all this. And you can, like, whistle, or it's not whistle, it's like a click on the camera, and they'll pose for you.
Oh, wow.
It's fun. It's chill. It's, you know, just kind of zen out and just have a good afternoon vibe kind of game.
Nice. That's awesome. I forgot. Yeah, I gotta get it because I forgot it came out. I did try Just Dance this weekend. It kicked my ass. So,
and I also discovered that there was a Marvel Legends MODOK figure. And if you watched me on Twitter, you saw me going like, I don't need it. And that was my head for like 4 days. Like, I don't need it. I'm not going to buy it.
Uh-huh.
And then one day I'm just like, fuck, fine. And I bought it.
Well, I mean, come on. In your defense, how much MODOK stuff do they really make out there?
They don't make much. And it's apparently huge because it's a fairly expensive figure. It's not like a $20 figure. It's like a decent price figure.
Oh, okay.
And I saw some pictures of like people who have it on their bookshelf and everything. And it's like to size with the other figures because MODOK is very much bigger than
your
average character. So
he's a big boy.
Yeah, I think I only have like a couple MODOK things. So it's, at the end of the day, I kind of had to.
Yeah.
But we're also coming into a world where there's going to be a MODOK thing on everywhere.
Right.
Little kids are going to have MODOK shirts soon after this Hulu show. So
yeah, for sure. All right, let's get into the TV news. We got to talk Invincible this week. Holy shit. Season finale was wild. But Warner Brothers has cast as Guy Gardner for the upcoming HBO Max Green Lantern show. So I mean, whether it's happening or not, we're getting casting. Finn Wittrock will take on the role, and that is the person. He's from a little well known TV series called American Horror Story. So I'm trying to think which person he was in American Horror Story because I've watched seasons of that.
And a very successful show that I have not watched a single frame of, but.
Oh, okay. Yeah, he's got the Guy Gardner face for sure. He's got the chin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could see him being a smug little asshole.
Yeah, yeah. A piece of shit. Yeah, he was the creepy dude that was, he was like the clown guy. Or he was like murdering people. Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's got that shit-eating grin that makes you want to deck him in the face. Perfect for Guy Gardner.
Exactly. So
yep.
I think it's hilarious that the first casting news we get is Guy Gardner.
Yeah, the least favorite of all the Lanterns. That's funny.
But it's also like, it just made me happy reading the articles where like they cast Guy Gardner for the Green Lantern show. And then we go further down. It's like the Green Lantern show that's said to have blah, 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 blah. And Alan Scott. And I'm just like, Alan Scott's going to be in the show.
Yeah, please. Oh, man.
I hope that they do justice by this. I hope that the Green Lantern show is really good because that's a property that deserves it more than any other comic book property out there right now. Green Lantern deserves justice.
Just make Brad Pitt, Alan Scott, and be done with it at this point.
That's not bad.
Yeah, pretty good casting, huh? You can take my ideas, DC. I don't care. They're free.
As long as I see Brad Pitt in a flashback sequence and he just sucks in a bunch of gas, he's like,
that's Jay Garrick. You're thinking
that's
of
Jay Garrick. Sorry.
Yeah, no, Alan no, Scott he's gotta still get finds into a lantern.
He's got to get into the train accident.
That's yeah, the train accident. He finds a lantern. Yeah.
When I think JSA, I just think of the fucking
breathing in real fast superpowers. Yeah, Jay Garrick's origin's wild. For anyone who hasn't looked it up, read that shit. It's comic book science at its finest. I mean, it doesn't get more comic book science than that.
Speaking of which, I need to find time this week, but that Justice Society show...
Yeah.
Not show, I'm sorry, movie is out.
Oh, the animated one.
Yeah, it's out digitally.
Okay.
So I need to watch that.
Yeah, for sure. We got a first trailer for the upcoming Sweet Tooth series at Netflix, release date of June 4th. I watched it. I never read Sweet Tooth, so I mean, I guess I'll check it out. Did you ever read that?
No, it's one of those ones I kept meaning to read and never got around to. I want to read it before the show comes out, at least the first trade before the show comes out.
Yeah, for sure.
did not realize how fucking dark that series is, mm-hmm. apparently. Because, yeah. Like, little kid with, like, deer ears, and yeah. all of a sudden, like, they're hunting them down, trying to kill them. Like, okay.
Yeah, I don't know. It's Jeff Lemire, right?
Yeah, and there's a great picture. This always makes me happy, just as a fan of a creator who gets to see his creation turn into what it is. But there's a picture of Jeff standing next to the boy playing, I don't know the lead character's name.
Oh, nice.
And just him being like, I can't believe that this is a thing.
Yeah, that's so funny. Like, out of all his properties to pick, and they go with that one first, you know, like,
It's nuts, yeah.
Hopefully that means we get a Gideon Falls show fairly soon.
You see that's coming to an end?
Yeah, and I think that's fine. Like, yeah. it should be wrapped up fairly soon. There's not a whole lot more they could do with the story, I think.
Yeah, because I saw Andrew Sorrentino is teasing his next project. I'm like, ooh, I like your work.
Yeah, nice. All right, so Invincible Episode 8 dropped, the season finale. Where do I start? This a lot of parts of this episode, I mean, Episode 7 ends with the Immortal being ripped in half and Invincible realizing, oh shit, my dad's a bad guy. My dad's a baddie. And then the whole, like, half of the episode is Omni-Man convincing his son that humans are expendable and just murdering tons of people. It was hard to watch, like, the train scene, holy shit. The train, he's just holding Mark in front of the train, and he's just like, people are being murdered on him. It was, like, insane. Like, that was never in the comics. But whoever writes this show, you're a sick individual. And I guess it's Seth Rogen, right? He's probably, like, hit his bog and was like, you know, this would be really good.
Actually, I can look it up again, but I'm pretty sure that Kirkman wrote this episode.
Did he? Kirkman, you son of a bitch. That would make sense. Like, what could I, how could I top, you know, the gore and I don't even know. It's nuts. They got me hooked on the show with the first episode, and I think a lot of people are going back and watching it now that it's wrapped up and, like, realizing, oh shit, this show's kind of crazy. So much else happened. I don't know if you realize, but we got a glimpse of Conquest in the flashback.
Mm-hmm.
For any of the people that don't know, Conquest is a Vulturemite that's pretty much the baddest of the baddies. So they kind of tease that where they're like, the Viltrum will not leave you guys alone, so they're going to send people, and Conquest is the one person they sent to reclaim Earth, and Mark has an epic battle with him, so it's going to be sick.
Yeah, Kirkman wrote this last episode.
Okay, makes sense. Yeah. So give me Conquest. I want, like, the first episode of next season to be Conquest.
Yeah, I love the way they ended the episode, too.
Yeah.
Like, just Mark and Alan sitting down, and Alan's just like, oh, so you're a Vulture, Maya.
Yeah,
like,
right. Nice.
There was a lot to love about it. It was very much action-packed. It was very much like Omni-Man making his very villain turn,
mm-hmm.
which will be interesting. I hope they do the same thing they did in the comic, because I believe, if I remember correctly, he goes to that, like, bug planet.
Yep.
And basically takes, or, like, just starts breeding with everybody.
Yeah.
That would be fun. I just watching this whole series was so
I don't
happy.
Know.
So, I didn't think this was going to be as good as it ended up being.
Did you know Mark Hamill voices the costume designer guy?
Yeah.
I didn't realize that. I was like, that sounds a lot like Joker. And then I paused and was like, oh, Mark Hamill. I'm like, holy shit, that's awesome.
Yeah. Those sequences, too, where they're all just kind of reflecting on, like,
yeah.
like that guy's not the guy I knew. What happened? And, like, especially the the costume designer's name, character. Just sitting there and, like, looking at that picture of him and Omni-Man, like, fishing one weekend. Mm-hmm. And he's just like, fuck.
Yeah.
That montage hit me hard.
The, I don't know if they can come back like they do in the comics, though, because like Omni-Man does way more shit, like kills way more people in that whole sequence than he does in the comics, I believe. I don't remember the train scene in the comics, but I don't remember how many people he kills, but it's going to be kind of hard to come back to Earth and have everybody on your side.
Yeah. Does he come back to Earth and like... Do people of Earth accept him, or is it just like Cecil that accepts him? And because doesn't he live on like the space station?
Oh, maybe, yeah. Yeah, they live on the space station together.
Yeah, my mind's clouded with like what this series was. I want to reread it at some point because it's been forever.
I know people that have like finished the show that want to read the comics now because of how good it was, and it's like, yeah, it's one of my favorite comic book series of all time. So that being said, it has been renewed for a second and third season, so.
Which is nuts. Like,
yeah.
I wasn't sure if we were going to get a second season.
Right.
We're pretty much guaranteed a third. That's awesome.
Yeah. I cannot wait.
Hopefully that means more Battle Cat.
Yeah. Yeah, we do get a glimpse of him, right?
Yeah.
We got a glimpse of a lot of the things going on for the comics, so, I mean, there's so much they could do. And back to it, though, Robot's voice, man. I wish Zachary Quinto was still doing that, but yeah. Maybe he had some bigger and better things to do.
Yeah. Is there another Star Trek movie coming out?
Maybe. Movie talk. Did you watch Mortal Kombat?
I did.
What did you think?
It's fun. Like, I enjoyed my time with it. It's goofy as shit,
though. Oh, yeah. It's really goofy. How about the scene where he's like, everybody knows that one friend, and I think I was that friend that spams the dropkick move in the game. And that scene where like Kano keeps getting dropkicked is pretty hilarious.
I love it because Kano literally does the jump from the old game, and then like comes down and he gets
hit again. Yeah.
As a whole, like, it was fine. It's just, it's a fun 2 hours or whatever. Anybody's trying to take, like, I saw some people, like, I think we started talking about this off air, but, like, the whole air cut thing. I saw people being like, we need a director's cut of this. I'm like, you people need to shut up.
Yeah, just watch them. It was, dude, the Scorpion and Sub-Zero scenes were amazing.
So the fight sequences are phenomenal.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I know some people have tried to correct me, but I don't care. I still think that the lead character is supposed to be like basically Scorpion.
Yeah.
But like, because I know there's different iterations of Scorpion throughout the timeline.
Right.
So he's basically the next Scorpion. And like, so Scorpion being a failed MMA fighter kind of bugs me. Yeah. Like, I'm not a fan of him. But everybody else was cool. I like the fact that we're going to get like, basically zombie Liu Kang and all that in future movies, because they basically teased it. I cringed when the guy said, like, what was it, fatality?
Yeah, flawless victory.
Flawless victory. Kano, cringed at that.
Kano was hilarious, though, in this movie.
Kano's good. I liked him.
Some of his, like one-liners are pretty great, but the fights were awesome. I think they did a great job. The middle gets kind of jumbled, but the beginning and end are pretty solid. The fight scenes are the best part. That was Jimmy Olsen, by the way, playing Jax. That's Jimmy Olsen from Supergirl. I didn't realize, because number one, he's like super, like, well, he's pretty large in Supergirl, but he's always wearing like baggy clothes and like a blazer. But this dude like had his shirt off for the whole movie. And also, he's got, like, a goatee, so I couldn't really recognize him. And then he started talking, I'm like, holy shit, that's Jimmy Olsen.
So, there's two things about the movie. One that made me laugh, and one that really frustrated me. Him, Jax, when he has, like, his dainty arms.
Yeah, his little...
And all I could think of, like, it's my strong hand.
Yeah, it's my strong hand. Yeah, it was kind of goofy looking, for sure.
And I can't remember the character's name, because I always hated him in the game. But the dude with, like, the iron lung who runs real fast...
Oh, yeah.
His voice was terrible.
Yeah, I hated his voice. It sounded so fake almost. I don't know.
It just sounded so weak and lame. Yeah. Like, he needs to be almost Darth Vader-esque.
Mm-hmm.
maybe not in the exact tone, but like he needs to have that deep and like kind of muddled metallic voice, not like I don't know, an Australian who just got kicked in the nuts or something. Like that's what he sounded like to me.
I'll be there
for the second one. As soon as they showed the ending where it's just like, oh yeah, here comes Johnny Cage.
I'm like, dude, they showed Johnny Cage. I'm like, come on, man, please. I want Johnny Cage to be like Batista or someone.
Well, what was the, they keep saying The Miz.
The Miz, yeah. Another wrestler. Yeah, that would be good too.
Which, I'm remembering correctly, is the wrestler who used to be on Real World.
Yeah, it's weird, man.
Yeah.
Because that's a reality show, and wrestling is pretty much a reality show, so why not?
It's nuts. But, if you like Mortal Kombat, it's a fun 2 hours. If you're just a Kung Fu fan, I don't know if it's going to really do anything for you. I thought the fight scenes were cool.
Yeah, fight scenes are really cool.
But it's not going to make any top 10 list.
But also, I don't know how you walk into Warner Brothers and say, you got a pitch for a Mortal Kombat movie, but you started off with, there's not going to be a Mortal Kombat tournament.
It's like, so that made me laugh. Our good friend Travis Gibb.
Yep.
Before I saw the movie, he just posted, like, no spoilers, but I would really love, like, a tournament in my Mortal Kombat movie.
Yeah.
And it just made me think of my Wonder Woman reviewers. Like, it'd be nice to have some Wonder Woman in my Wonder Woman movie.
Right, exactly. Yeah, because that was wild. It was like, they talk about this tournament for, like, the first half of the movie, and then they're like, oh, by the way, we scrapped the tournament. We don't have it in the budget. Like, COVID hit, so no tournaments this year.
I did the scene where they're in like the whatever the other realm, and Raiden like sends them all to their like the fighting arena.
Yeah,
and it's literally just arenas from the game.
Yeah,
it's like we're just gonna match you up and you fight here.
Yeah,
that made me laugh. Like they teetered that line of like too cheesy.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's why I don't think it's a bad movie. Like I'm gonna shit on it because it is super cheesy. But it never goes over the hump.
Right.
It never, like, hits that wall where it's just like, okay. Like, we gone too far.
Right. No, I agree. Still enjoyable to watch.
It's a lot of fun. Everybody, check it out. Especially, it's free.
Yeah, it's free. Well, if you have HBO, right?
If you don't, what are you doing?
I know.
What are you doing?
What are you doing? And also, what are you doing if you're not listening to this interview? So, we're going to jump to that with Will Perkins, and we'll see everybody on the other side.
Welcome back, everybody. This week we have yet another very special guest for y'all. Everybody, welcome to the show, Will Perkins. Welcome to the show, Will.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. And a Rochester native or someone living in Rochester. So that's
just east of it. So yeah, I'm drowned in either rain or snow. Pretty much anything you get me.
Yeah, it's
right there with us.
At one point, though, I mean, well, a lot of the comic shops have closed now, but there was always like an awesome comic presence in the city of Rochester. And that was like one of the things that got me back into comics when I was going to school there. And that's how Chris and I met. So it's not all bad, I guess. Right.
It's just always walking around being like, you don't like leaving your house either. Oh my God. Okay.
Yeah. Perfect.
What do you do?
Yeah,
what creative comics thing do you do to kill 8 months of snow?
Awesome. Well, hey man, thanks for being on the show. And with every first timer on the show, we like to do a quick origin story. It doesn't have to be too long, but what got you into obviously illustrating and drawing a comic? But have you always read comics at an early age? Where did it start for you, kind of?
I mean, it depends on how far you want to go back. Like, first, my parents have sex. No.
Okay, nice. No, let's start there. Yeah.
Nice.
So I always start my origin in December of 1987, when a man and a woman got together.
Right.
In the 9 months I came.
First, my mom was kicking. No. So I don't. I've been drawing as far back as I can remember. Like, that was my favorite thing to do. You know, like drawing, you know, being 5 years old and drawing really crappy comics with my best friend. But my origin story, at least the one that I've like mythologized, was my parents took me to the West Irondequoit Public Library.
Oh wow!
And they always were like, just go, like just it felt like we'd spend hours there. And there was like the comic book section, right? It was about this big.
Yep.
And it had Calvin and Hobbes. It had Farside. And then anything else. And there was Dark Knight Returns in the middle of it. And I'm like 5 years old. And I'm like, Batman.
That's awesome.
And then you open it up and it's like, zombie Superman. What is going on here? And I probably took that out every couple weeks and just like look over the pictures. I had no idea what was going on. Then years later, in like high school and middle school, I was at my buddy's house and I saw like issue 3 just sitting there, like a loose one of it. It's like, what is this? And I was hooked. I was back in.
Yeah.
And now I had like a thing to draw.
Right.
And from that point forward, really, I was just kind of, I mean, I was always reading comics the entire time. You know, you take your breaks for like, you know, oh, you meet girls for the first time and then you take a little break and then, you know, you get really, really poor. So you take another break.
Yep.
And then, that means is you reread whatever you've collected so far endlessly.
Pretty much.
I graduated college. I had gone to school to be a teacher. Like I had like an English degree.
Yep.
And I was like, I'm going to go to super senior. I want an art degree. Nice, I don't want to teach. And, you know, you get out with an art degree. You can't draw anything yet. And I just started working a really crap job and just sketching any idea I could possibly come up with or find anything. And luckily, my brother, Mike Perkins, who's the editor-in-chief at 215 Inc. and a hell of a writer in his own right.
Yep.
And he and I would just kind of spitball together. It's what we had always done as kids. So it was like, I'm pretty good at the drawing stuff. You're pretty good at the writing stuff. Maybe we just do this. Let's just try one.
Right.
Just try one, right? And we did, and we kind of pitched it to 215 Inc. at the time through Steve Lindsay of Jesus Hates Zombies fame.
Yep.
And he kind of brought us into that crew and just kind of went from there. Small press for life, but like
For sure.
People you meet in small press, you tend to collect and then just move forward with. Ever since then, I've been doing it every single day of my life.
Awesome. And I think my first exposure to you was in a FUBAR. You did some work, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Got to do some zombie work.
You always start with some zombie work. That was a long, long time ago. Yeah, but that same kind of thing. You know, the guys in Small Press Commandos, Jeff McComsey and Steve Becker were just like, yeah, just try one. And I was like, all right. Like, people in comics are so welcoming. This is great.
Right,
like,
right.
Yeah, I'll try one.
Yeah.
Try another one. Yeah.
So awesome. For listeners outside of our general realm of Rochester, New York, he brought up so many local names that I just got really excited thinking back, like, what, 5-10 years ago when all that was going down. But what makes me laugh is my entire life always comes back to Philly, because 215 Inc. is actually a Philly-based company as well. So, like, the two things that are Chris just merge in this great little time period in our local comic atmosphere.
And it's funny, like, it's that, like, How do you know it's the best time of your life when it's happening? Like,
right.
It's just a whole bunch of people just trying to make comic books and, like, you know, you're sleeping on floors at comic conventions and it's great.
You didn't think
that's why I met Eric.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. And then you guys, so who did Eric have the idea for Goblin, or was that like something you guys kind of came up with together?
Well, Eric and I met through 215 Inc. He was doing a book called Dead Horse. And he's since had a long career, a bunch of different really great books, you know, small press, self-created books like Planet Gigantic and stuff. And I had seen his work in Planet Gigantic, and it was like this like never-ending story, sci-fi, Star Wars romp. And it was like, it's everything I love about fantasy sci-fi. And I just kept pestering him. He kind of one day offered me a job on it. I did a short little backup in like a third issue that was same kind of thing. Just fun 80s fantasy romp. And it's kind of like in comics, if you get a writer that you love to work with, you get your hooks in them and you just don't let go. Cause it's like, they're the lifeblood, right? They're just like pumping ideas into you.
Right.
And, we did some stuff. We did a book with Dark Horse back in 2017. mm-hmm. called Gregory Suicide. Total opposite of spectrum of as Goblin, but it was it's like our first real mainstream effort, and very few people read it, as they usually do. But he came to me, you know, we just keep pitching projects to each other, and he had this idea for Goblin, and he said, he came to me with an idea. He's like, I don't know what this is yet, but, and forgive me if I'm being too long-winded.
No, no, that's fine.
And he's like, I don't know what I'm going to do with this. I'm thinking I'm going to write a children's book. Maybe it'll just I'll need some illustrations here and there from you. And I was like, well, you know, tell me about it. And he kind of lays this thing out, in the beginning, it was a much darker, because like his influence was Legend. Like he's kind of just like that visual presence of Legend, not necessarily storytelling, but you know the visual of it. And we would talk about like Dark Crystal and Neverending Story and these like 80s Germanic dark fantasies that we loved, that, you know, before there was a PG-13 in between R and PG.
Right.
And he told me this story of like a revenge story. You know, we both love video games, and he was saying, you know, it's, you know, you go into Skyrim, you slaughter an entire cave full of goblins.
Right.
And then you go about your merry way and you're going to be king. But like, meanwhile, that one you left alone in the middle of that dungeon, like, that's shitty. Right.
Yeah,
like,
right.
They're just minding their own business, lighting candles for you before you come into the dungeon.
Right.
And so I started really hounding him because like I think he wanted to write a book with it. Eric's so talented, like he's got a book eventually, and I'm going to just keep trying to keep him from doing it and giving me a comic book. And he's, my usual trick with him is like, give me eight pages. Just write 8 pages of a comic script. We'll see what it looks like on paper.
Right.
And it was dark. It was fun. It was gritty, but it was a little too dark. You know, it was kind of, we were sitting in between tones, you know. So we finally landed in that PG-13 era after we got some really good feedback from a few editors and things. And we took this pitch, we completely retooled it. I basically went back to the beginning and redid it with Eric, kind of cleaned it up. And we had this middle school grade aged, you know, end up fantasy adventure, like a revenge comic, a road story. It's great. Yeah. And luckily for me, Eric was like, I want to, like, let's do this. Let's pitch this thing. I was like, all right.
Yeah. Like, nice.
All right. Let's do this.
And I would say, like you said, you know, children's book or somewhere in between. I would agree with that, because it's lighthearted, but it's not like, you know, for children, but it's also not only adults. Like you said, it's right in the middle there.
It's like heartfelt with stakes. Like that's like someone could die, but you know, you're not going to necessarily see guts.
Right.
Which is hard. You know, like I said, our previous book was Gregory Suicide, right? It was like an attempt at like a gritty near future Black Mirror episode. And it was, this was the total opposite. So we have to keep doing that, you know, like, all right, what's too much? What can kids handle versus what would be like pandering to them?
Mm.
Well, and like, I don't want to spoil the book at all, but there is like a chapter in there where a problem occurs, and it's not just like, okay, I'm a goblin, how do I, like, you know, blow something up or kill somebody? Literally just uses his wits and sits there and realizes, like, what's a goblin's greatest strength? We flash back to the beginning of the book. We get a little tense of that, and he kind of wits his way out of the situation, which was just a really cool chapter of just... Mm-hmm. It doesn't, like you said, it doesn't have to be this dark, gritty thing. It can be kind of a fun, lighthearted moment, which I really liked. Conflict.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of my favorite movies was always Unforgiven. And it's the idea of, like, you know, you remember that as being an incredibly violent movie, and it really isn't.
Right.
It's, you know, it's kind of antithetical to that. And it's Goblin. The appeal that I have with Eric's writing is it's always just a little off genre. You know, it's more about that fantasy than it is the adventure, or, you know, there's always heart in his writing, and it was a blast. It's my favorite project I've ever worked on.
Yeah. And it's, a few pages in, like you said, like you don't think you'd care about a goblin, but like a few pages in, you're like, oh shit. Like, I actually, you know, have feelings for this. Boy. Yeah. Yeah. I feel so bad. Like, let's do it, man. Like, you could do it. Yeah,
well, see, it makes me laugh, because the back in the day when I played Magic the Gathering much more than I do now, I was the little shitty kid who came in with the goblin deck all the time. So I have this preconceived notion of what goblins are, and reading this, I'm just like, oh, a little kid.
Like, they're not so bad, right?
Right. Yeah. And we just, it was all the same thing. We're like, kind of like, what are our favorite things? Dungeons and Dragons, Magic the Gathering. Like, yeah, let's just kind of play around in our favorite stuff.
Right.
So let me ask you logistically with this book. When reading it, I liked the chapter breakout and how each kind of chapter story felt kind of one and done and almost like you could have just read it on its own. So why go with a OGN as opposed to trying to do this issue by issue?
Well, Eric and I have a lot of similar proclivities to this stuff. Like I love a singular object, right? Like a thing. You just, it's done, it's on the shelf, you have it. Starting up in small press, you guys know the pain of going up to the convention table and being like, this looks really good. Do you have issue one? I'm like, no, I just have 47 copies of issue three.
And Yeah.
Right? So like from a purely selfish standpoint, one and done, right? You just, as a person who loves comic books, holding one thing and just, it's all right there. Mm-hmm. But also, you're not, you're already a slave to the page turn, you're a slave to panel, but now suddenly you don't have to spend all this time at the beginning of the next chapter, like, all right, now let's wrap up what we did previously and what we did after. And like, we can just keep the momentum moving because it is a road book. It's a story about these characters going on this journey together and what happens and how it changes them. And I don't, it's sometimes having to spend that time spinning your wheels. It just kind of, it deflates that momentum that you've already built up. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. We talked about it. We discussed it, and we're just kind of like, we want this to be a fantasy epic. We want it to be one thing you hold, especially for, like we said, because we're going for younger kids, not something that they have to like worry about finding one issue or not. Just be able to buy it for your kid, read it for your kid, read it with your kid. Or like you said, we aim to hit that middle ground where you can also just enjoy it. It's not going to be talking down or anything.
And as far as like the whole construction of it, I mean, we talked about this before we were recording, but you kind of had a lot of freedom. I mean, there's a few pages where there's no dialogue and it's just a lot of cool stuff happening, whether we're getting like glimpses, into the future or something like that. So was that, you were kind of just given like, okay, this is the layout that I want and you just get to draw it, there's no dialogue. So,
Eric and I have a very, I always like to call it, like, we have a very honest relationship with each other. Mm-hmm. Like, in the beginning, I'll tell him, like, story above all else. So, like, I will fight you tooth and nail for an idea.
Right.
But if one of us isn't happy, we're not doing it. Right? Mm-hmm. So even if it's like you just feel it in your heart. And so Eric would give me these scripts where, that page that has no dialogue on it in the script is, like, two pages long.
Okay.
Because he's communicating with me what, in the liner notes, listen to this song or I'm referencing this kind of a tone. And so it would be like, it's more of a dialogue that we'll have on those pages specifically, we'll have the most back and forth.
Wow.
Because I'll do layouts. And like I said, I'd be like, this is what I'm feeling from your script. And he'll look at it and then he'll rewrite a script to it. And we kind of go back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
So even just like last week, I read the most recent version of the book after Eric had lettered it, and it was the same kind of thing. We're just like, oh, look, you changed even more from this. Like, okay, just kind of like slowly narrowing from both sides until you get that perfect point.
Yeah, it's interesting, and it flows really nicely though. It's not like you hit the art and then you got to stop. It still kind of progresses nicely through the story. Between the dialogue and the parts of that. So yeah, I thought that was really cool. And it really shows you, I mean, your illustration, like that really makes the story, I think, too, the art of it.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
It's, there's something we always used to joke about it. When you're talking about like page drop, this thing we used to call when a person is reading a comic book and whatever reason, whether it be too much dialogue or the art is just not flowing, but you stop reading and you start just like skimming. Mm-hmm. And, like, as soon as that happens, you're out of the flow. You've lost the reader.
Right.
And it's like, that's the nightmare. I'm always trying to avoid that exact moment because I hate it when I'm reading a book and I realize, like, I'm not really paying attention. I'm just looking at this thing.
Yeah, I'm just sitting here staring at these
ones. I'm not in the book, and I'm here because I want to be in this. I want to escape.
Right.
The last series you did, I'm sorry, I'm zoning on the name, but was that also at Dark Horse?
The Gregory Suicide?
Gregory Suicide, yes.
Yes, we did. We brought that to Dark Horse, and they produced a wonderful, like, hardcover for us. Mm-hmm. And that was back in 2017, I believe.
Okay.
So you guys, when you were making this book, you had some sort of relationship with Dark Horse ahead of time, and obviously had them in mind when you were finishing it up?
Yeah, because, you know, both of us, you know, you always have that, like, when you're a little kid, you're like, I want to work for Dark Horse someday.
Yeah, right.
That's what I want to be, yeah, right?
Yep.
And we had a great experience with them, and like I said, the final product was such high quality, and this felt like a Dark Horse book when mm-hmm. we were kind of, so it was like, well, of course we'll go, you know, everything in comics is who you know, right? It's not that many people,
right?
And we're like, well, we'll go, we'll pitch it, we'll send it to Mike Richardson over at Dark Horse and get their feedback on it first after we got the pitch kind of locked in, and they were happy to give it a try. It was kind of a fairly easy sell on that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right with that. It does feel like a Dark Horse book. And I guess, like, one more thing about the art too. I know, I guess I understand how you can write a story with heart, but how do you add like lightheartedness or, like, you know what I mean, to your art? How do you do that? Cause you seem to do that pretty well in this, but
I appreciate that because that's my aim, is like, and we went through the 90s where everything was just like, how do you make this dark and edgy?
Yeah, right.
But exactly. He just, like, sprinkled that on everything.
Yep.
And I didn't love that stuff growing up. You know, mm-hmm. I grew up on Jim Henson. You know, I want that.
Right.
I want a little bit of seriousness with some importance to it. And I don't know. You just, like, it's like you watch a movie in your head, and you try to capture the thing that makes you smile in your own head, and then try to make the actors act on the page in the same way. So, like, you know, never going for the, like, you know, the squinty eyed, grim, dark thing that you immediately jump to, and just a lot of redrawing.
Yeah. I guess that makes sense. Like, you know, not so many sharp edges, you know, facial expressions, stuff like that. I guess that, yeah. Like
finding, I joke, like, luckily I work a lot while my wife is at work. Mm-hmm. And, because, like, honestly, like, you draw explosions by making explosion noises. You swing swords. You make sword clang noises. Like, you find yourself mimicking the faces and just like, right. Oh, God, he's looking at me, right?
Yeah.
You don't see a lot of artists in Starbucks.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Who's that now we're getting in his chair?
That's amazing. The truth comes out of what actually goes on. That's awesome.
That's you got to do like hide in your houses.
Right, you got to do like a B side and, like, record that or something and, like, release it after. Like, these are the things. Yeah,
set up a camera while just facing me while I'm drawing.
Yeah,
be like, was it that Shia LaBeouf watching all of his?
Oh yeah. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, you can sit in the theater and watch all of his movies in a row.
Amazing.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, so when can we expect this book out? Is there a release date?
Out bookstores is May 26th, and then in bookstores everywhere on June 8th. We're still available for pre-order. Obviously, you can go to, like, Amazon, Target, Walmart, all the big ones.
Yep.
But, in fact, let me just double-check that real quick. Yeah, Walmart, Target, Barnes & Noble, and Amazon. We have realmofgoblin.com. Okay. Eric's a web designer by trade, so he set up a nice little landing spot.
Mm-hmm.
So you can pre-order right through there, watch the trailer, all that stuff. But
okay.
Otherwise, yeah, head to your comic book store and or your bookstore and ask them for it.
Is there a tabletop? Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, for all previous Will Perkins books, especially the 215 stuff, is that still in print?
Yeah, so you should be, if you go online, I'm going to be honest with you, if you go online and find Gregory Suicide, you're going to be sitting pretty. You'll get it for a song.
Yeah.
And if you go to your comic shop, you like beware any of the stuff that I did for 215 Inc., you still should be able to get that, have them order that. It'll probably come directly from my house.
But, awesome.
And then... I think you were mentioning, yeah, if you go to the Realm of Goblin, actually, we put together a cool little, I guess, promo. It kind of came out of a conversation last fall. We're like, what's something fun we can do with this, right? Like, we don't want to just be on Facebook annoying all of our family and friends being like, buy our book.
Right.
As much as buy our book. Yeah. But Eric had recently discovered Dungeons and Dragons. Like he had some other exposure, you know, being, okay, he's a little bit older than me, so be a child of the 80s.
Okay.
And he's like, do you play Dungeons and Dragons? I was like, actually I still do. Like, I did a lot when I was a kid, but yeah, I still do. He's like, have you seen these manuals and how cool they are? I was like, yes, I do.
Oh yeah.
Like, that's the coolest part of Dungeons and Dragons. Playing is just incidental. Mm-hmm. And so we kind of, Eric wrote this prequel module that you can play. You can download it off Realm of Goblin for free.
Oh, that's awesome.
And it's all set in the world of the comic. It's really meant to be played before, but you can play it after if you've read the book. Mm-hmm. And it's just kind of these little kisses with history within our own world. You can kind of influence the comic a little bit, you know, kind of explore the spaces in between everything that we kind of spent so much time filling in.
That's so cool. Yeah, because I had seen there's something about tabletop involved with it, so... That's so funny. He's like, have you heard of these modules?
You're right.
Have you seen these things? Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
So I did some illustrations for it, and the best part is I got to play test it, which I had never done before. So it's like, cool, you know, coming back home with a group of people and be like, all right, well, here's where all my murder hobos ruined the last game. So here's the problems we're going to have.
Yeah.
But now it's all up. We got it. It's you can go right to realmofgoblin.com and download it for free. Try it out.
Yeah, I was just looking at it, and it's compatible with 5th edition?
5th edition, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
That's cool. That's a cool thing to do. I wish more people did that, especially when they're doing fantasy stuff. I remember, what was the series? The Last God that Philip Kennedy Johnson did, and he did a whole book where he did the same thing. He saw an issue that was just like... tabletop stuff. It's all with Dungeons and Dragons, and I just wish more people did this stuff. It's just a cool idea.
Especially because Wizards of the Coast, they're so cool about it, being like letting you just put homebrew content out there. I mean, how you stop it, really? But
hell, they're making their own homebrew content now. You can buy a Rick and Morty and a Strange
Stranger Things
edition. All
that stuff, yeah. Oh, yeah, I did see that.
Yeah, all that wild stuff's out there.
Luckily, you know, there's a lot of conversations of, like, you know, trying to teach someone who's never, like, really put in 100 hours into Dungeons and Dragons that magic system alone. Like, trying to fine tooth comb that was interesting, but.
Yeah, that's cool. That's awesome. Just a little something to, like, expand the universe even more. Yeah, and it fits so well with the story. Awesome. Yeah, so, Will. If we want, you know, our listeners, viewers to follow you, where's the best place to send them?
Well, let's see. On Twitter, I'm Dill Gherkins. You can just search for Will Perkins and find me that way.
Yep.
Will Perkins Comics on Instagram. And for anything else, either willperkinscomics.com or realmofgoblin.com.
Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, everybody, I'll have those links down in the show notes below, so make sure to check them out. The Goblin website especially is just really cool.
Yeah.
So, Will, thanks so much for being on the show.
Yep.
Yeah, look forward to talking again soon, man.
Yeah, thanks.
Absolutely.
Thanks
for being anytime.
Here. And we're back.
Awesome. So, yeah, check out all the cool stuff and pre-order Goblin. It's really good. I mean, we already said it. What else do you need, right? So...
Yeah, especially you got kids getting into reading. Like,
yeah. No,
that's
I
a really
agree.
Really cool book. Solid.
Okay. And then, you know, the little bit of comic book news we have this week. DC has announced that DC Fandome, they're keeping the name, everyone. That's it. Second year in a row. It's coming back this year on October 16th. The event will stream online in a similar 24-hour fashion as last year's event. I watched last year's event, and it was pretty dope. So, yeah, I think this is a great idea. I just wish they changed the name.
Yeah, and I'll just read the news afterwards.
Yeah.
To be fair, if it was Marvel Fandom, I would watch all 24 hours, too.
Right.
So I'm not shitting on you for that.
I pick and choose what I wanted to see. There was some good stuff, like interviews with... like, I think they interviewed James Gunn, and then that's when they dropped the Suicide Squad trailer. So that was fun to watch.
But that's my wonder is it going to be like last year? Because, like, didn't they drop the Suicide Squad game trailer last year, too?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And are we just going to rehash some of the stuff from last year?
I think they're pushed, or... I think they're going to set up the schedule. Like, I think we're getting a Batman trailer. Hopefully.
Didn't we get a Batman trailer already?
Well, a new Batman. Someone said there's like a new Batman trailer out. Like, I've been seeing it on the internet and like promo images. So, but also I think we're going to get the new slate of the DC Cinematic Universe, because they can't just let a couple movies come out. They have to like prepare for the next 20 years like Marvel did. So I think we're going to get something in a similar fashion.
I'm going to put my chips all in, and they're gonna announce Justice League Snyder Cut Volume 2. That'd whatever cool. They're gonna call it.
Yeah,
Snyder's gonna get his number 2 on it. That's what I'm calling.
Nice. No, I think that's fine. Why not?
But outside of that, I just wonder, because of the reality of the world we live in, COVID, blah blah blah. How much stuff was supposed to have come out? And has now been pushed so far that's just like, okay, let's rehash these trailers again.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, it is a reality. I'm not going to shit on anybody for doing that, because it's what it is. But it just makes it a little bit less of appealing for me personally.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? Maybe we get the Black Adam trailer, and I'm just like, what the? Okay.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. All right, let's jump to what we read this week. I read quite a bit. I, you know, traveling on a plane helps me catch up on reading. Let's see. I read all the way up to Legends of the Dark Knight number 4. This is the Derek Robertson art and writing. And I know Stephanie Phillips announced she's taking over like issue 6. So good for Stephanie. That's pretty awesome. This like,
did she say who's drawing hers?
I'm not sure. I think she did, but, this issue was, we get a new villain. So Derek Robertson sets up, like, we think it's the Riddler, but it's not. It's a girl named Quiz that kind of looks like the Riddler, but that's cool. It's fun to see new villains. Berserker number 2. This is the Matt Kent, Keanu Reeves book. Have you been reading this?
No.
Basically, you know, this immortal dude is, you know, fighting for the U.S. government, but we get the origin of, like, basically these cavemen people were, like, being attacked by this neighboring village, and they like, prayed to the gods for a weapon to fight back, and it's this crazy scene where, like, this lightning bolt hits her in the uterus, and she pretty much has sex with a god, and yeah, and then they birthed Keanu Reeves, and he's pretty much like the immortal fighter, and he was, you know, born to save their town. And so he kills like the people that are evading the town, and he's like, that's the last time I was happy. So he's starting to remember like where he came from and stuff like that.
That's some Zeus shit right there.
Yeah, it was pretty cool though. If you're not reading this, it was a pretty cool issue. 20 Fists. This is Frankie White, right? That we had on the show last week. This is solid. It's like, you know, the Jets and the Sharks and beating each other up. And it was cool. I mean, it's $1.99 at Comixology for a first issue. Solid story about these people in a relationship and, you know, like two warring gangs that don't like each other. So, and the art was really cool. I think you should check it out. Batman Superman. This is number 17. This was wild.
Oh, yeah.
Like, this whole story is just crazy. The art is amazing. They're still doing the film reel things. You know, we get Superman and Lois Lane coming to Batman's world, and then you get the warden showing up with like souped up versions of Batman villains. Like you get a giant penguin, like who kind of looks like Solomon Grundy. You have Joker, but he's got like mouths all over his body. It's really creepy to look at. And then like, I don't know the name of this guy. They find out it's like an android, right? He's an archivist.
I want to say the warden.
Yeah.
I didn't realize until they said the line, I did not realize it was Lex Luthor.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's true. Yeah. Cause he has a goatee, but he's bald. Yeah. So it is Lex Luthor.
He's the archivist. That's the guy.
The archivist. So we find out he's like orchestrating everything. He's got Batman, Superman trapped in this. So basically this whole story we get is just another universe that archivist pulls kryptonite out of. Like, it's not like part of the main story, but it's a story going on, and that's where he gets this kryptonite out of to fight Batman and Superman in real time. At least that's the way I understood it, right?
Yeah. So he's like directing this world to create drama. He's a failed film student.
Pretty much.
And And in this world there's like a kryptonite bracelet, and I'm guessing he's huge because he uses it as a ring.
Right.
I love this issue. I love this book.
It's so good. It's really good.
This is everything I've always wanted out of Superman Batman. Like, I've always checked out Superman Batman books, and I've enjoyed them.
Yep.
But I always thought there was more there, and this is it.
Yep.
Everybody pick this book up. It's awesome.
I read Injustice all of season one, so that was over 400 pages. I read it. I will say it's worth the hype. That story is amazing, like the rise and fall of Superman and like him just spiraling into insanity. So now I got to read season two because it ends where Superman's, you know, pretty much gone off the rails.
Yeah. And remembering that was supposed to be a 4-issue miniseries.
Right. And you can tell the art gets progressively better towards the end because like, oh, more people are buying this. So we need to make it look pretty. It can't just be Tom Taylor's writing. Even though that's what holds up, right?
Yeah.
Great story. I can't, like, I gotta read season two. That was just it, though. I had to sit and read all those 400 pages. I couldn't put it down. Transmetropolitan, I'm halfway through the first, I don't know if they're, like, collected editions. I got it. It's about, I don't know, 300 pages. I've read about 100. That book is just wild. I mean, Derek Robertson's art, it's Warren Ellis writing it. He's a little, I know we kind of canceled him, but I'm treating it like, you know, I can't think of the creator of Harry Potter, but nobody likes her anymore. So you kind of have to like read these things out of context of what those people have done, you know, or like the bad things those people have done.
It's not to get too much into the weeds, but I always say like, A, you could, I know a lot of people who love Transmet.
Yeah.
We're just like, I still support it because Derek.
Right.
So you can say that, but sometimes you got to separate the creator from the art because the art is so good. I mean, I always come back to Ender's Game. I love Ender's Game. Orson Scott Card's kind of a weirdo.
Yep.
So.
And then the last book I had after all that. Oh, actually, I read a couple more. I read ENIAC number one. I got my hands on a Bad Idea comic. That book was wild. Did you read that one?
I haven't got around to that one yet.
That was really good. Matt Kent and Doug Braithwaite. Really crazy, like the government, all the nukes on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, like they make this artificial intelligence, and that's basically been driving the world from like World War II, and it's been making all the decisions. And basically they have this spec ops team that needs to take it out. Like this artificial intelligence is like about to end the world and they need to stop it. Really crazy story. It's not what I thought it was going to be. But these, the Bad Idea. It was just cool to like, you know, have something that's, it's only in print. So, and then crossover number six, man. I know you read this cause you were texting me when it happened. Lots of stuff happens to this. I pretty much finished the issue and told everybody they need to read crossover after they read God Country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we get the the guy doesn't shoot that girl, and then we get into the dome, and we find out all the heroes in the dome are just Image Comics. This is like a love letter to all of Image Comics characters, because you get in the dome, there's a big splash page. I mean, you see Battle Pope, Savage Dragon.
Yeah, Luther Strode.
Luther Strode.
I Hate Fairylands in here.
Yeah.
Actually, there is... So, there's a... It's not Red X. Fuck. Yeah. But it's a Dark Horse character is in the background.
Yep.
It's so many great characters. And then when I looked up and I just saw, like, Battle Pope shooting two pistols in the background, just like, what the fuck's going
on? And then you get the Walking Dead zombies, and they're still in black and white. That was the great part. Yeah. So, you know, the big fight happens. Ryan wants to, who's like the kid that was a piece of shit that burned down the comic shop, wants to stick around. The old man dies that owned the comic shop.
Hit Girl saves him.
Yeah, Hit Girl. Oh my god, I forgot that she shows up. That was amazing. Oh my god, I forgot Hit Girl. Yeah. It was just so cool. Otto's the old man that dies. Ellie at the end is, she's pretty much like, they want to go after the younger girl, right? Is like where they kind of leave off.
So they get her to the portal, and then they go back, and the kid saves Ellie, and she's like, and he goes, well, we'll find your parents. They're in Denver somewhere.
Right.
And that's when she kind of reveals, like, yeah, my parents are in Denver. And spoilers, everybody. She's from the comic world as well.
Yeah.
So I don't think if anybody knows who that is, please send us a tweet, an email, something, because we were both trying to rack our brains. I don't believe it's somebody we
know. And I was trying to look it up on the internet. I don't think anyone knows, but I think, well, so this whole time we don't see any Invincible characters in this Image comic things. And I want to think she's related to Invincible somehow. Because she's wearing an Invincible t-shirt at the end. Like, they tease you this whole time. Like, they show all these characters, and I was looking for an Invincible character in the background. No Invincible characters. And then, lo and behold, she's wearing an Invincible t-shirt.
Maybe. I mean, there's a ton. I even was sitting around thinking, like, maybe it's a character, and then when this is done, like, Donnie has a book where Ellie's the lead character again.
Right. Yeah,
in their world. Cool. What really shocked me about this is I thought this was... We talked about this privately. I thought this was six and done. Like,
yeah, that's the story. Me too. Done. Yeah, and I thought they'd wrap it up, but...
And then I seen issue 7 being solicited because Chip Zdarsky and Phil Hester are doing it.
Yep.
And this is referred to as the first story arc, so...
And I don't know if you noticed, but in the back page, you know, Donny Cates story, Jeff Shaw art, Mark Waid story edits.
Yes. Did we never talk about this?
I don't know if we talked about this, but he's editing the overall story.
So I listened to an interview with Donnie talking about this, and he had this, he said, I'm paraphrasing his words, but he said, like, I had this idea, we're going to do this, we're going to cross all the comic book worlds together, blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
And then him and Shaw were talking about it, and he just sat down and was like, there's only one person in the world that could help me make this happen. And he gets on the phone, he calls Mark Waid, like, hey, will you edit this book for me?
That's so amazing. I did not know that.
Because a few of the, like, superhero characters in there, too, are Mark Waid creations as well.
Okay. So,
I don't know if you have it digitally, right?
Yeah.
So, I don't know if it's in your version, I would assume it is, but after the final page, if you keep going, there's a list of characters and who they're credited to.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Battle Pope, Chu... Ghost X, yeah, okay.
Ghost X, it's not Red X, Ghost X.
Oh, Incorruptible is in it, okay.
Yeah, so you can see there. That's why, like, I didn't match any of those to Ellie, and then when I went online and see anything about it, that's why I think it's just her own character. Kind of like the little girl isn't somebody from something,
yep.
But she's from the comic world.
Oh, I didn't realize they were in Astro City. That was the
city. Oh, really? They're in Astro City?
Yeah, Kurt Busiek is actually referenced in it. They're in Astro City.
That's phenomenal.
Black Hammer was in it? Oh, man.
I saw that, yep. Yeah, because Colonel Weird was in it, and I love that scene.
Yep.
Book's awesome.
So good.
I can't match that intensity for my next couple. I read some good books, but I can't match that intensity.
Yeah, that was it. That was it.
I'll start with Robin number one. So this is kind of taking place after Robin has decided to leave and he doesn't want Batman's help anymore. He's going to be his own man.
Mm-hmm.
And he starts fighting in underground, like, cage fighting matches. Mm-hmm. So that he can get to the Lazarus Island. And he's going to find something out about the Lazarus League.
Interesting.
So he gets a credit to go there. He goes there and he meets up with everybody. He's being cocky Damian Wayne.
Of course.
And says, like, you know, fuck all this. Let somebody just fight me. And then he gets into a fight with this girl, and I forget her name. But she's going, and at the end of the last page, she goes, you know, you forgot one rule about Lazarus Island, and you just see her punch through his chest and pull out his heart.
What?
And so I'm like,
I'm guessing okay. He can't die.
Well, the rule is that all fights are to the death.
Oh, so his heart gets ripped out. Okay.
So I'm like, okay, issue one of Robin, and he's dead?
They'll throw him in a Lazarus pit. Come on.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he is a Al Ghul.
Yeah, come on.
But it was pretty good. It was that fun. If you like Damian Wayne, it's yeah. Fun.
Cool.
The Marvels number one. This is Kurt Busiek and designs by Alex Ross, but not art by Alex Ross. And what we got here is we're seeing some sort of timeline with this like foreign Asian country and how it connects to different superheroes in the Marvel universe. And then we kind of get back to the present. We got this guy who's giving like superhero tours through his Kapoof app or something.
Okay.
And he's got an old Reed Richards Fantastic Four hover machine that he's like bringing people around New York City in.
Yeah.
And while that's going on, the Punisher's fighting some sort of Yakuza and a big explosion happens right next to where this guy's giving a tour. And we kind of just cut to this random supervillain who I've never seen before, who gives a quick speech, and then it's like, and it all happens next issue. It's a very cluttered mess of an issue.
Okay.
But it's Kurt Busiek, so I'm like, I'll give you a chance.
Nice.
But it is very much like a cluttered mess of, like, what are you trying to do here, Kurt?
Mm-hmm.
MODOK Head Games number 4, the final issue.
Ugh.
MODOK meets the guy who created him, his father. And his father tries to reprogram him to say that, like, all the stuff that's happening with his wife and the family, that's just a computer error that he created to kind of deal with his emotions. And MODOK, as he's in this chair trying to, like, deprogram everything, is just like, fuck y'all, and kills everybody instead.
Oh.
And how he kills everybody... Oh, I just... back up. They try to take away all of his weapons, and then somebody pulls out a cell phone, and she's like, why does MODOK have a cell phone? He's a living computer. Then you go to the end of the story, and he's sitting there, and he gives a speech about what happened during War of the Realms, where he found a piece of the Uru and took it for himself.
Mm-hmm.
He took that Uru and created a cell phone case. So then he called the Uru, and it just went around and killed everybody in the room. And then he just grabs it, and he's like, I got my cell phone back, and he puts it away, and that's kind of the end of the book.
Okay.
This book is awesome.
That's awesome.
It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of, like, black humor, dark humor, gore, but it's right up my alley, and it just gets me so excited for
that show. Yeah, so, nice.
Miles Morales, Spider-Man number 25. We're starting Clone Saga, so it's Miles fighting clones. It's not a bad story, but my big critique here is, like, did we need to do this again?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we did the Clone Saga, and it was terrible.
Right.
Can we do something different with Miles? Like, maybe give him his own story? Because that's what I was enjoying about Miles, is that he's Spider-Man, but he's different.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, okay, we'll get to the Clone Saga and see what happens, but... And then my last issue is Savage Avengers number 20. Which I sent you pictures of it privately.
Yeah.
It
was awesome.
So right in the beginning, like, it's the first page that I sent you, and Conan sits down at the bar with no name. He takes a sip of beer and goes to the bartender and says, what was in this ale?
Yeah.
And says, well, you know, we're the bar with no name. We get what we can get. It's leftover from Oktoberfest, so it's pumpkin beer. And this is my line I'm going to give every bartender for the rest of my life. Never serve me gourd ale again.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I love Conan.
Always refer to pumpkin ale as gourd ale.
Yeah. So the rest of the story is like the rhino comes in and is like, oh, we need to do a mission to help the bar with no name so we all have a place to hang out. And then Conan's like, okay, I'll do it with you. Because Conan doesn't really have that like black and white sense of right and wrong. And he has a thieving past. So basically him and Rhino team up to go rob a bank. And Spider-Man shows up. And Conan bests Spider-Man. And then kind of goes off along his way.
Mm-hmm.
This issue is like all Conan and no anybody else in the event, the Savage Avengers. So it was a little weird for a one-off story. But it does set up like Cullen Gath, who they've been fighting and chasing throughout the world, resurrects one of his old priestesses and says, like, you know, go off and find Conan and kill him. So I'm sure next issue we're going to get the team back together and trying to fight this, like, zombie priest. But, nice. Yeah. Savage Avengers is a really fun book. Everybody should check it out.
Sounds it.
And I think that's everything I read this week. So, Mike, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me at Fortress Ricker on Twitter. Where can they find you and or the show?
You can find me at Fortress Chris on Twitter. And everybody, if you made it this far, that means you like us. So go there and follow me because I might be announcing a new show this week.
Oh.
And you can find this show at Fortress Comics _ on Twitter. Nice. Everybody give us a 5-star review on iTunes, whatever podcast you use. Like, subscribe, share, comment down below on the YouTube channel. And if you want to be the extra special, awesome bonus person, go to Patreon at patreon.com/fortresscomics to get fun things like Bat Friends 3 days early. And I don't know, possibly another podcast if we get enough people on there,
Ooh.
You know, fun stuff like that. And yeah, so everybody, thank you so much for listening and we'll see y'all here next week.
See ya.